possible start. That's Breakfast with me, Nick Healy.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
On the rise and has cost Australians up to
$1 billion. Most people sort of fantasise about flying. Most people think about it. So rather than just thinking about it, we do it.
I've been stopped on the street and spat on.
How many pages do I have to do and how much have I done so far? And I've only done like 1%.
And bang, it was in like a split second. I had no time to react. I was on the ground.
Because the reason why this is even occurring is because there's a demand.
Good evening and welcome to Razor's Edge, 2SER's very own Sydney Focus.
So this week, we listen to the second piece of a series we are running on the euthanasia debate. This time, it's with Shane Higson from the Right to Life Association. And our crowdsourced question, Seeking Sydney, will be premiering tonight. And we will talk about the talk about that later in the show. You, the public, asked what we found and we found an answer to the question, why is there a Bruce Lee statue in Kogarah? We'll be talking about that later on. And hang around because later in the show, we break down the New South Wales budget that was released earlier in the week. You're listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.
A lot of people who've been injured in accidents don't get legal advice about compensation because they're afraid of what it will cost. But the truth is, it doesn't need to cost you anything. A specialist injury lawyer could actually fund your case for you. Law Partners is Australia's largest specialist personal injury firm, and it costs nothing to call their local office to get some advice. Call Law Partners on 133 529 or visit lawpartners.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
So first we'll be speaking to the Vice President from Dying with Dignity. It is a three-part series of the euthanasia debate we'll be airing tonight on 2SER, discussing the issue of euthanasia. Monica Samoyoas chats with Shane Higson, Vice President from Dying with Dignity, and brings us with the experience of losing a loved one due to a terminal disease and later opting to support the voluntary euthanasia party. Let's hear from them now.
Last week, I spoke with MP Trevor Kahn on the drafting of the Voluntary Assisted Dying Bill 2017. After a conversation, it prompted me to continue research on the controversial bill and found Dying with Dignity. Dying with Dignity is an advocacy organization that has been pursuing to change the laws on voluntary assisted dying since the 1970s. I spoke with Shane Higsby, who tells us her personal story of why she got involved in her fight to pass the bill. How did you get involved with Dying with Dignity?
My mother died in late 2012 from an aggressive brain cancer. She accepted there was nothing doctors could do when she was diagnosed earlier in the year. Her condition deteriorated quite quickly, actually, over the 7 months. But it was in the last couple of weeks where her suffering became so unbearable that she was pleading with us to end her life. And unfortunately, under the current laws, there's nothing that you can do to avoid the end stage of some of these really awful diseases. So watching my mum suffer was definitely the most traumatic thing I've ever experienced. So I made a promise, really, to myself to do all that I could to help change the law so that someone who is dying and they have unrelievable suffering and they just want to die peacefully have that choice. It's a choice that over 200 million people in the world now have that choice, and I think Australians deserve it as well. Currently, if you're dying here in Australia and you have unrelievable suffering, you have three legal choices. You can take your own life. So in other words, commit suicide, and that is often lonely, it's bleak, and very often violent. You have the right to refuse all treatment, including food and water, so you can basically starve and dehydrate yourself to death. Now, that's very long and psychologically painful for you, but also for your family. And then the third option, the third legal option, once you have been suffering for some time, if you're lucky, a doctor may slowly induce a coma. It's called terminal sedation. But again, this can take some time, and it only happens when they really can do no more to alleviate your suffering. So there's a lot of suffering that happens before they reach that stage. I think what people have to realize is that people want to live. Nobody, when they get their first diagnosis of terminal illness, gives up. Everybody fights. The reality is that there are a lot of diseases that the end stage is pretty horrendous. We should be able to give people that control. We give them respect and control in other end-of-life decisions. For instance, you know, being allowed to refuse all treatment, including food and water. We give them that autonomy, yet we don't provide them with the peaceful option.
What would be the percentage of people who would choose this option?
It's hard to predict exactly, but even palliative care specialists themselves say that the numbers of people whose symptoms cannot be relieved effectively is between 4% and 8%. So the reality is that palliative care, we're very lucky. We have one of the best palliative care systems in the world. Palliative care do a wonderful job. However, there are some people whose symptoms cannot be relieved. But the thing with this law is that it would give everybody who is dying that reassurance that they have that control if they want it. And not everybody will want it. In Oregon, where they've had the law for 20 years, 40% of people who qualify, they don't end up taking it. But it has a very strong palliative effect to know that you are in control, and that if your symptoms become unbearable, that you have the choice of a peaceful death.
Would this option be covered under Medicare?
At the end of the day, all we're talking about is a prescription for a barbiturate that used to be legal. Some people access that drug now illegally from overseas and take matters into their own hands. But of course, they can't involve family members or friends, anyone else, because that would be seen as assisting a suicide, which is currently illegal. It is legal to suicide, but it is illegal to assist someone to suicide. But the cost should never be about cost, obviously. I mean, we've just seen the state government put $100 million into palliative care over the next 4 years, which is very welcome. Organisations like Dying with Dignity New South Wales fully support palliative care, and we want it to be well-resourced, have enough people so that everyone has a choice to have palliative care if that's what they want, if they're dying. However, this would just be an option within palliative care. So there would be virtually no extra cost. I mean, someone, as we know from the evidence overseas, people hang on to life. They want to live. So it's only when their life becomes completely miserable, their suffering unbearable, that someone may want this final choice. The launch of the bill a few weeks ago, a 54-year-old woman called Annie was present at the press conference. Annie has motor neuron disease. She contacted Dying with Dignity last year and said that offered to be the face of the campaign, because we know personal stories do make a difference. That way, when politicians are debating the bill, they will realize that we're talking about real people with real suffering. Annie started a petition a few weeks before the bill was released, actually, on change.org. Already got nearly, I think, 75,000 signatures when I last looked. If people support Annie's petition, that will be able to pass a message on to the politicians. And so definitely here in New South Wales, Annie's story, you know, is really strong. But there have been others over the years that I've been involved. Ina Ranke was a woman from the Hunter Valley who Dying with Dignity did a video of. She also had a progressive neurological disease, and she ended up ending her own life, so she suicided. John Grayson is a terminally ill man from Newcastle. He has terminal brain cancer, and he's also, we've done a video, Sally Crossing, who's passed away. So a number of people have come forward, and they want to share their story to try and make politicians realise that this is about real people. We're just asking our politicians to look at the evidence, look at what the people want, look at the reality of the suffering that exists in the absence of these laws, and step up, you know, do it. Every year that we miss out on a law, more people like my mum are going to be forced to suffer. It's just, it's cruel, it's inhumane. People even refer to it as torture. And my own mum referred to it as torture. She asked me, why are they torturing me? And that's the reality. If we don't change the law, then that is the outcome. And are those MPs who blocked the law, are they going to take responsibility for the torture of dying people? Are they going to take responsibility for the numbers of elderly people who are suiciding in terrible circumstances? They need to do something, change the law and make this a part, just an option within palliative care as it works overseas. And what we need to do, and what listeners need to do, is contact their MP. If you believe that a dying person should have the choice to end their life peacefully at a time of their choosing when their suffering becomes unbearable, they need to speak up. They need to contact their local MP, write a letter, send an email, pick up the phone and call them, or even have a face-to-face meeting, particularly if you have a personal experience that shapes your opinion. Our politicians need to hear from people, and they need to hear from people over the next couple of months, so that when this bill is debated in spring, they will have a very clear idea of just how many people do support it. And that way we will be able to counter the well-funded vocal minority who want to stop everyone having this choice.
Shane Higsby's personal experience led her to join Dying with Dignity to fight for those who have lost their battle and those who are still holding on to continue the fight. Next week, I speak with Isaac Spencer from Right to Life to hear the opposing side and listen to their views.
And a big thank you to Shane Higson, Vice President from Dying with Dignity. And for more information, you can go and visit their website. Now, don't go anywhere, guys. Up next, we've got our first Seeking Sydney story, and we answer the question that's been brought to us by a 2SER listener. Why is there a Bruce Lee statue out in Kogarah? I'm not sure. Anyway, stick around, because we've got that investigation right after this. You're on 2SER 107.3.
He's number one again. Ranked as Australia's number one young university for the third year in a row. As a truly modern university, we never look back. By continually challenging conventions, we not only change the status quo, we improve it. Join us for a course info evening. For options, dates and other details, go online and search for UTS Course Info Night. UTS, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
All right, now, this is the first week that we are using the crowdsourced journalism tool called Seeking Sydney. So basically, we have a on the 2SER home website, on the page, we have a place where you can put in a question that you want to know about, little questions that you might have about Sydney. How did that big iconic Coke sign end up in King's Cross? Anyway, this week, a 2SER listener has put forward this question about why is there a Bruce Lee statue in Kogarah? Anyway, so we've got a great story made for us by the team that we're going to bring to you now. This is on 2SER.
Bruce Lee was a superb athlete and was the most iconic martial arts superstar. However, I do wonder why he has a statue in Kogarah. Quite odd.
Whilst Bruce Lee is awesome, I don't understand the significance of this statue in this location. Very random.
I walk past this statue and have absolutely no idea what it is or what it's about. I know who Bruce Lee was, but I don't know what his connection to Kogarah is.
The Bruce Lee statue in Kogarah. Number 5 of 15 things to do in this southern Sydney suburb, after the Oz Sea Sailing School and Jai Tong Thai Massage, according to TripAdvisor. And if TripAdvisor is anything to go by, this 2-metre statue has people scratching their heads. Why is there a Bruce Lee statue in Kogarah? This is Seeking Sydney, where we answer the questions you have about this harbour city. I'm Ellen Leibeder. So I'm going to show my age here, or maybe my movie ignorance, and say that I had no idea who Bruce Lee was when I started this story.
Concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory. Never take your eyes off your opponent, even when you bow.
Well, that kind of blows my mind, to be perfectly honest, because...
This is reporter Nick Healy.
I don't think I'd overstate it to call him one of the most influential martial artists that's ever existed in the world. Like, he really elevated what we know as Hong Kong action cinema. The reason we have the kind of films that have that kind of high kinetic action that you see these days is all thanks to Bruce Lee making it a kind of household name.
Yeah, right. But, like, what's so special about these movies? Like, what is so good about them? Are they just, to me, they just seem like another action movie.
That's because they defined what is another action film now. But at the time, no one had seen action like that. We only think of them as another action film because they were there to set the standard.
Okay, so Bruce Lee is awesome and an icon, but that's not the reason why he ended up in Kogra. Kogra City Council weren't, like, massive Bruce Lee fans or anything. The reason why there's a Bruce Lee statue in Kogra, it's pretty easy to solve. Nick went to the statue and read the plaque.
Here's what it actually says on the base. Presented to the city of Kogra, New South Wales, Australia, Bruce Lee, King of Kung Fu, by the People's Government of Shunde District, Zhangdong, PR China, March 2011.
We also spoke to someone from Kogra Council, now known as Georges River Council.
So I'm Arabella Lee. I'm a community development officer at Georges River Council and I work in cultural services. So the Bruce Lee statue was a gift from the former Kogra City Council's sister city, Shundi, which is a city in Guangdong province in China. And it's quite a large industrial city. We had particular relationship with them that was based on trade and diplomacy and friendship and building cultural understanding. And they gave us this statue.
And Kogra should actually feel pretty chuffed that they got a statue out of all this. Normally with sister cities, you exchange art and cultural artefacts or toothpicks.
When you have a sister city relationship, sometimes you share arts and cultural sort of artefacts, or you might get a tie or some toothpicks, or, you know, you'll give each other tokens. But to actually receive this statue is very significant, and it's a really valuable and important thing, not just for Kogra, but sort of internationally.
What's more useful to a city, toothpicks or a statue of Bruce Lee? Anyway, we didn't give Shundi toothpicks. Arabella couldn't confirm what we gave Shundi in exchange for the statue, but the South China Morning Post reckons we gave a rugby jersey and a boomerang in return.
He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down below.
I wanted to find out more about Shundi and how the relationship with Kogra came about.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Who am I speaking to? I got a missing call from you.
After a few dead ends, I managed to track down the former president of the Shundi Association of Australia. Yes, is this Andrew Ooyong?
Yes, me.
It's actually Andrew Ooyong. I really butchered his name there. Shundi is Andrew's hometown. He's lived in Australia for 30 years now, and he was instrumental in creating the relationship between Kogra and Shundi. Bruce Lee is originally from Hong Kong, but moved to America when he was 18. His ancestors came from Shundi, which is why the town has such an affection for the actor. They've got their own Bruce Lee statue, which stands at almost 20 metres tall, and they've also got a theme park. And are you a Bruce Lee fan yourself, Andrew?
Of course, Bruce is from my hometown, my village. He was the one of the very famous figures in our hometown, yes.
But more than Bruce Lee having ancestral roots in Shundi, and more than him being great at martial arts, Bruce Lee's films have timeless messages that to this day still stick with Andrew.
I love all Bruce's movies. Not only just the movie, but also his a very good personality and his philosophies and, you know, being good and being strong and responsibility. There's a lot of things about him, yeah.
It's something Arabella found as well. After the Bruce Lee statue was installed in Kogra, the council asked some of their Chinese residents what their thoughts were.
He's our Chinese hero, protecting our Chinese culture. I feel proud when I see the Bruce Lee statue. His movies represent achievements against all odds. He was gentle. In spite of his fighting ability, he only ever fought in defence. I'm not sure why his statue's here, but I do like to see his statue. He represents freedom, strength, and the will to have power over the mind and body.
It's not just the Chinese population who appreciate this statue. 5 years on, and the people of Kogra have embraced this very random, quite odd monument.
I sort of take a bit of note about these sort of statues around the joint, and I quite like it. I mean, it fits in well culturally around the area. It's a fairly mixed, diverse place here in Kogra. But, I like it.
I've noticed it before because I go to the church here, but don't really... And then when we came to work here, we read it the other day.
Do you like it, though?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's what Bruce would have wanted. After all, we are all one family.
You still think of yourself Chinese, or do you ever think of yourself as North American?
You know what I want to think of myself? As a human being. Because, I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, as Confucius say, but under the sky, under the heaven, man, there is but one family. It just so happened, man, that people are different.
If you have a question about Sydney, and please know more about why public transport is crap or why the city is so poorly designed, we all know who to blame for that. There's no mystery there. If you've got a question about Sydney that is challenging, head to 2ser.com and look for the Seeking Sydney question box on the homepage.
Oh, well, a big thank you to Ellen Labita, the Wire producer, Emma Lancaster, and the man of the morning, Nick Healy, for bringing us the first of many Seeking Sydney stories that you'll be hearing from us here on Razor's Edge. If you liked our story on Bruce Lee, please go online to the website and give us a question. Give us another question you want answered about what's going on in Sydney. Anyway, don't go anywhere, guys. We are breaking down the New South Wales budget after this. You're on 2SER 107.3.
Scientist, humanitarian, conservationist and UN messenger of peace, Dr. Jane Goodall returns to Australia with her message of hope for the future. Think Inc. and the Jane Goodall Institute Australia invite you to enjoy a rare opportunity to witness her on stage on June 23 at the Horden Pavilion. Info and tickets at thinkinc.org.au. Sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
And you're back on Razor's Edge with me, Jesse Begley. Now, the New South Wales budget was released 2 days ago on the 20th of June with New South Wales Treasurer Dominic Perrottet announcing the $12 billion budget and calling it the envy of the Western world. I've got producer here, Ellie Madridge, to help me break down the winners and losers of the New South Wales budget. Welcome, Ellie.
Hi, Jesse. So we'll start off with the winners. The big winners of this budget are hospitals, with Prince of Wales Hospital undergoing a $710 million reconfiguration. Campbelltown, Tweed and Concord Hospital will also receive funding for redevelopments. We've got $1 billion being put into statewide emergency rooms and an extra $20 million that's been set aside for mental health. New South Wales schools also receiving $1.6 billion bump ups to bring the total spending over 4 years to $4.6 billion, and it's going to upgrade 120 schools across the state. This budget has also brought more investment into the justice system, with $62 million being spent to curb reoffending rates, $47 million to combat radicalisation in prisons, and $15 million for New South Wales counter-terrorism capabilities. We've also got first-time homebuyers coming in on top, with new stamp duty concessions, which are expected to help over 24,000 people get a foot on the property ladder. And last but not least, we've got roads. And nearly $73 billion will be spent over the next 4 years on infrastructure, and a huge chunk of that will be splashed on the third stage of WestConnex, everyone's favourite new Pacific Highway that's going to be going through Sydney. And I think you can tell us about the losers.
Wow, that's a lot of money being thrown around for this budget. So for the losers this week, they're cracking down on foreign investors, which might be a relief to some of the Sydney residents. With foreigners looking to snap up homes in New South Wales, they will be stung with hefty surcharges. The government has doubled the foreign investor transfer duty surcharge to 8% and lifted the land tax surcharge from 0.75% to 2%. In a bid to help locals buy their first home in the heated property market. A big hole, gaping hole in the in this surplus budget is the environment, with $0 being allocated towards any renewable energy projects or trying to bring trying to bring more clean energy into it. It's unsure how the government will reach at this rate will reach its 2050 target of having zero emissions. Despite that, they have dedicated $320 million to which will be spent on building resilience to environmental hazards and risks, and will be combating fire threats in national parks, and $41 million to assist local councils with coastal and flood damage. A little bit of money taken away out of ICAC, but redistributed in other parts of the offices. So a little bit of a hit for them. Train commuters with disabilities take a little bit of a hit, with over 100 stations are still not disability accessible around New South Wales. The government will spend $200 million in 2017 and 18. The Greens claim this isn't enough. By not making to aim all stations in New South Wales fully accessible, that is a downside for them. So that brings us to the end of breaking down the for the winners and losers this week. We'll be right back on 2SER after this.
A lot of people who've been injured in accidents don't get legal advice about compensation because they're afraid of what it will cost. But the truth is, it doesn't need to cost you anything. A specialist injury lawyer could actually fund your case for you. Law Partners is Australia's largest specialist personal injury firm, and it costs nothing to call their local office to get some advice. Call Law Partners on 133 529 or visit lawpartners.com.au.
Well, that's it for us here at Razor's Edge. I'm Jesse Begley, and a big thanks to our Razor's Edge producers getting us these intriguing stories, Monica Samayoa, Ellie Madrich, and Hyo Jin Shim. So if you liked our story on the Bruce Lee statue in Kogra, get online and shoot us some more intriguing questions about that you want answers to. Get us out there and working, getting us to do some urban journalism for you. You can find the Seeking Sydney input box on our 2SER homepage. We'll be back next week at our usual time at 7:30 on Thursdays. Same day, same time with different stories. We do podcast all our stories, so if you'd like to hear anything again, just jump online at 2SER website. Up after this, we've got Static with their great selection of awesome new music for you. Anyway, to take us out, we've got Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit with their new album, Nashville Sound, and their song, The Cumberland Gap. This has been Razor's Edge, 107.3. Maybe the Cumberland Gap just won't